Blog Talk Radio.
Have I told you lately that I love you? Have I told you lately that I care? Yeah. Have I told you lately that you are wonderful? You're magnificent and so much more. Have I told you lately that I love you? Have I told you lately you're my king? Have I told you lately that you are number one? You're magnificent.
Ray,
a name she calls herself, Ray, a drop of golden sun. Who is this Ray that brings a breath of light to everyone she meets? There's a saying, to know me is to love me. Not so with Ray. To merely meet her is to love her. Ray, a narrow beam of light. Ray, a stream of electricity. Yes, this is quite an accurate descriptive word for Ray. For she electrifies everyone who comes into her presence. She radiates a beam of hope to all who would otherwise choose despair. She breathes life to the dying, hope to the hopeless, and sight to the blind. Ray, a faint gleam. Ray, a burst of energy. Those who've heard of her would expect one whose light is dimming. Those who don't know her would suspect her to be weak. Not so. She radiates beauty to all. She projects strength to all who would otherwise choose weakness. I saw Ray once. She dispersed light to my blinded eyes. I spoke with Ray once. She brightened my world with her words. I touched Ray once. She reached out and strengthened me with her ray of hope. Ray, a very special lady to you, Ray Lewis Thornton. You've tuned in to the Dr. Maxine Bryant Show, and today I have the honor, the special privilege of having as my guest Ray Lewis Thornton. Now, Ray and I met, some 15, maybe even 20 years ago in Indianapolis. And over the years, we've just forged a genuine friendship, I would like to think. And many of you may know of Ray's story. She discovered years ago that she was HIV positive. It transitioned into full-blown AIDS. And she has become a woman who epitomizes groove. Now, you all know, if you've been listening to the store, show on a regular basis, that groove is being grounded and rooted in the Word of God and in yourself so that you're not easily knocked off your square. Life has hit Ray Lewis Thornton hard, not once, not twice, not three times, many of times. Yet she always seems to get up, get back on track, and walk in her groove. So today, ladies and gentlemen, get ready. For the next 60 minutes or thereabout, we're going to sit in Ray's living room, so to speak, and just chit-chat about life with Ray living in groove. Ray Lewis Thornton, how are you?
Hi, how are you, Maxine? Yes, I consider you friend.
Thank you, thank you, thank you, and you likewise. You have been on quite a journey, and your journey has been one that many people would probably have just said, you know, forget it. I'm not doing this. This is just way too hard. I didn't sign up for all of this. But yet you have persevered you in many ways have thrived. And so I'd like for my audience to get to know Ray Lewis Thornton. So let's start. We can start maybe with a little bit of your childhood, and then I want to talk about when you worked with
Reverend Jackson and the campaign and my politics.
Yeah. His name just left me, right? So why don't we start there, and I'll be interjecting questions as we talk about how you maintain groove in spite of it all. So tell us a little bit about your childhood. Were you born in Chicago?
I was not. I was born in Buffalo, New York, and I was brought to Chicago sometime after my first birthday. My parents were an interracial marriage, but they were both heroin addicts. Maternal grandfather took me to raise me, and my father was murdered sometime after that, after I went to live with my grandfather when I was three. And my mom actually lived a life of a heroin addict for many, many, many years. I didn't meet her until I was 18. So I was raised in a household with my grandfather's second wife. And, you know, she did the best she could. She did it her way, how she knew how to do it. You know, I tell people all the time, she was a functional alcoholic. She never slurred. She never staggered. She never missed a beat. But, you know, her brand of child rearing was cruel. And so I grew up in this environment where I felt unloved and I was physically and emotionally abused. And I'm an adult survivor of childhood sexual abuse. And so, you know, mama put me out when I was 17 because I was 15 minutes late from a curfew and I never looked back. And, you know, worked two jobs through my senior high school, kept going, went to college. And at college, I found that I had a gift to really organize. And it was a really incredible time in Chicago. I was at one of the downstate schools, Southern Illinois, and Harold Washington was running for mayor. And I organized 7 busloads of students to come to Election Day to work at the polls and then get back on the bus. Because we were like 7 hours away from Chicago. So it's one of the furthest state schools. And they got on the bus, rode all night. We got to Chicago. We were housed at Operation Push. All the college students were housed at Operation Push. And because we had such a large group from SIU, I got thrown into some kind of leadership position that day. And at the end of the day, someone from Push, the national director of the Push for Excellence program, you know, Tyrone Kreider, he said, you know what, you are very gifted. I'd like to give you an internship. When school is out, call me. So at the end of the summer, long story short, I went to work at Operation Push. That's what it was called then.
Right.
And I was put in charge of organizing student leaders around the Anheuser-Busch boycott.
Okay.
Jesse Jackson, Push, we were boycotting Anheuser-Busch because more African Americans drank Budweiser than any other race. But they won't investing back into the community. They had no black beer distributors. They had no black, you know, CEOs or board members. And, you know, the list just goes on and on.
Right.
And they had these festivals called Superfest. And they were this humongous concerts in the summer. And it would be all black entertainers, but they'd have no black producers, no black PR. And so we boycotted. So the students, I organized students across the country, and we shut down the Superbud Fest across the country. And when the end of the summer, Reverend, they loved my work, and I was asked to go on the Jackson campaign. And so I moved to Washington.
Stop right there, because I want to come back to that. But listen here, Ray. You grew up in an environment that was less than desirable. But yet somewhere you found some inner strength to push yourself to excellence, to where you excelled, you identified a gift, excelled in it, and eventually landed on as a part of Jesse Jackson's campaign. How did that happen? What do you think it was that motivated you to rise up beyond your adversity?
You know, I grew up being, you know, told that I wasn't ever going to be shit. I mean, that was my bottom line. And there was something, I knew that there had to have been something other than this, you know, than what I was experiencing. And I was telling someone earlier today that we were living in Inglewood, which is now one of Chicago's worst neighborhoods, but, you know, it was still Inglewood back then too. And when I was in seventh grade, my mother moved to Evanston. And so we were, you know, out there in the suburbs, the suburbs on the lake, Northwestern University is there, kind of a college atmosphere. And my eyes were open to so many things. My eighth grade homeroom teacher was the mayor of Evanston years later. So it kind of gives you the caliber of people that were educating me. And so, you know what, I just knew that I was better than what I was told that I was, and I knew that I could do better. I ended up at a church that was upper middle class. Dr. Heisabe Taylor had, you know, a PhD. And so the exposure another world helped me to know that there was another world.
And that matters. That matters. Yeah, that matters a lot.
And I grew up in this era where, you know, where we told young people to work hard and go to school and get your education, and you could get out of your circumstances. And so, you know, with the influences that I had in Evanston, this suburb of Chicago, and my high school was like the number one high school in the state of Illinois during the period of the years that I was there. So with all of this exposure, I just wanted more for myself, and then part of me just wanted to prove my mama wrong.
Okay.
And when I
say
mama, I'm really referring to the only mother I knew for 18 years, which was my step grandmother.
Right. Okay. So now you rise up above your adversities. You find that inner strength. You're out to prove mama wrong, and you find yourself on the campaign trail with Jesse Jackson. So let's pick up there and continue your story.
I did. And so I went on the first campaign, and it was the most incredible experience. I realized I was good at what I did. When the campaign was over, I went back to college, back down to SIU, and SIU could not contain me. You know, I jumped right back into it. It wasn't even like I was going to school. We were the Free South Africa movement was going on, and I was protesting and trying to make the university divest its funds from South Africa, and I was registering people to vote, and the classes I liked, I went to. The classes I didn't like, I didn't go to. But I was playing the people. Yes, sir. And so after that year of doing very poorly, I went back to Washington. And that put me on the path to a very productive political career, where people that I worked with, my counterparts, were Donna Brazile, Alexis Herman. I sat in meetings with, you know, Secretary of Labor Alexis Herman, and, you know, just really exposed. I sit back and I say that I really, really, really was blessed to have been exposed to really incredible people at a young age, you know.
Yes.
Dorothy Hyde, Alexis Herman, Ernie Green from Little Rock 7. I mean, and the list just goes on and on and on. And, you know, it's just, but even in that time of doing all of these wonderful things, I only knew one way of life, you know, what I was taught, how I was taught it as a child, adult survivor of childhood sexual abuse, and I was always looking for Mr. Right. And that combination led me to HIV. And, you know,
What do you mean that combination led you to HIV?
When you grow up, the sex is love, then that's what you look for. You're looking for somebody to love you, and you meet a guy, you think he's the best thing since sliced bread, the bread molds, you cry about it, you talk about it, then you move on to the next Mr. Right. And
okay.
The cycle just really keeps going until you get married.
T.D. Jakes calls that serial monogamy. Yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. What it is. Never had a one-night stand, never had sex on the first date. I was picking and choosing and willing and dealing because I'm an attractive woman, and I do what I do. I'm smart, and, you know, any man want to be with me, and it led me to.
So then, Ray, how did you find out that you had HIV? How did you find out you were HIV positive?
I donated blood. In fact, I organized a blood drive. There had been an Amtrak accident in Northern Virginia. I was living in D.C. at the time. There had been an accident in Northern Virginia, and there were news reports on television about how people were afraid to donate blood because, they thought, could get HIV from donating blood. And I thought, how absurd. Organized a blood drive. They came out to our job, and they had just started testing all donated blood. But think about it this way. The first cases of HIV were documented in 1981. They didn't develop the HIV antibody test until 1985. So from 81 to 85, to know somebody had HIV/AIDS, they were dying.
Wow. Let's stop right there. We need to stop just for a moment for a word from our sponsor. Thank you, Ray. Hold on.
Okay.
Do you want to learn more about how to get your groove back, deal with groove imitators or groove stealers? Host a groove back party in your community. It's easy. We'd love to talk with you about it. You can invite your friends and family to your home or have a larger party at your church or club. Send the Grooveback Doctor an email at www.mygrooveback.com or call 612-876-7964 to discuss setting up your event. Get your Grooveback party scheduled today.
Thank you. Okay, so Ray, you organized the blood drive because there was a lack of blood as a result of this horrific accident, and you were the organizer. You were the one who said, let's get together, let's give our blood, because you can't get sick from giving blood.
Right.
Okay. Go on.
Yeah. about 3 months later, I got a letter in the mail that thought was a thank you letter, was a letter telling me that something was wrong with the blood I donated, and I went to the Red Cross, and the next day they told me that I had tested positive for HIV.
What's your first response? You're in a period of time where there are no antibodies that have been identified, and a label of HIV positiveness is a death sentence. So what is your first response
Okay, back then we didn't know very much about HIV. And there was this invisible divide line between HIV and AIDS. And so the medical community was telling us, you're only HIV positive, you may never get AIDS. Because they didn't know whether a person would, in fact, transition to AIDS, because you have to understand, they in the first almost 5 years, they only saw AIDS cases, because the only way to know you were infected is if you were dying. And then when they started testing people, they realized that people had HIV, and they had to give it some time to see what it was going to do. And so those first, I remember walking down the Red Cross building saying, okay, God, I can handle HIV. I mean, sure, I lived a tough life. I was like, HIV ain't nothing over my mama. And
let me ask you this. I remember a time, Ray, when people would say that if you had sex and you did contract HIV, it wouldn't manifest itself for 7 years. You remember that? Was that true then?
Yeah, and that was a confusion. They were mixing information up.
Okay.
This is what they were confusing it with. It back then. Now today, it's a different ball game. If someone gets tested and get into treatment right away, it's a different, totally different ball game. But back then, it took 8 to 10 years, maybe 6 on the low side, for someone to transition to AIDS, which basically means that HIV is inside of your body. It's destroying your immune system. But there are really no symptoms. And so you're walking around infected and not know it.
Mm.
Symptoms come when HIV has destroyed your immune system, your T cell count is 200 or below, and then you become at risk for the opportunistic infections. And that's what kills you. And so for me, I kept saying, okay, Lord, I can handle HIV, but don't ever let me get AIDS.
Mm.
And I didn't start to get sick until like 92.
Wow, about almost 10 years later.
Almost, yeah. And
so let me ask you this, Ray. So you were operating in your groove. You were in college, you were donating, you know, you were organizing, you worked on a campaign. You were living a dream. I mean, really, you were living a dream. And then you get hit with a groove stealer. That's what I call it in my book, a groove stealer. Got this disease, and it's incurable. But it didn't knock you off your square at that point because you didn't have all the information, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
And when I got all the information and I started dying, I was like, well, sure, I'm going to live. My groove was, I'm going to live until I do die.
Okay. I remember that period of your life.
And then that was when you met me. It was during that period of my life that you met me. And for all practical purposes, I was on that timeline of death. And I was like, okay, Lord, once I understood that this is what I was supposed to do, this here is what I'm supposed to do, I was like, okay, well, I'm going to speak to as many people. I'm going to let the Lord use me as much as possible until I die. And at least they say she put up a good fight. I didn't expect to be here this long. You know, I would go to high schools when I first started speaking, and I'd say, by the time I'd have a freshman stand, I'd say, by the time you graduate, I'm going to be dead.
Wow.
That
was 30 years ago.
They said, Miss Thornton, you said that by the time I graduate, you was going to be dead, and I'm 35 years old, and you ain't dead yet.
Wow. And that time, when you transitioned to full AIDS, so you didn't have any symptoms for like the first 10 years or so, and then your T cell count became low enough for them to say you transitioned, and you discovered, well, you transitioned into full-blown AIDS, but if I'm not mistaken, guys are still trying to hit on you. Guys still wanted to have sex with you, even though they knew you were infected. Is that correct?
Well, yeah, that is correct. That would be true. You know, I was married and divorced.
So let's talk about the marriage.
You know what? You know what? I tell women all the time, be careful what you ask for. You just may get it. And I want somebody to watch me die.
Okay.
You know, I had seen all these horrible reports about people dying by themselves and hospital hallways with AIDS. I was like, I don't want that to be me. And my ex-husband was a wonderful caregiver. And then I didn't die. And the boy got mad. He stopped speaking every day. His ministry was to watch me die. And I didn't die, and then he had nothing else to do.
Wow. How long were you married?
That, 4 years, but we were together three-ish.
And it took almost a year for the divorce to get final because he wanted everything. He came with a polyester suit and some holy Fruit of the Looms.
Okay. Now, see, I remember that. I met you before you met. Was his name Kenny?
Yeah. You met me when I had a husband.
I thought I met you right before you got married. I thought I remember
mm-hmm.
you getting married.
Because you didn't meet me until after I was on the cover of Essence. When I was on the cover of Essence, I had been married. I had gotten married that August, and I was on the cover that December.
And life was good for you then. I mean, I remember taking you shopping, and you were, going to the pet stores.
And
I
was
spending
every dime I could because
I
wasn't
going to
be here.
Yeah, but it was good. And so you were, that's another time in your life when, in spite of being sick, you were living in what many people would consider to be groom. You had a husband.
You're right.
You were making money. You were on the cover of Essence. You were jet-setting across the country, going out of the country even, and speaking. You were it. You were the thing, right? And so how did that make you feel, Ray, during that time when it seemed like you were on top of the world, in spite of the fact that statistics said you were going to die, you were actually living, and you were living every woman's dream. How did you feel?
You know what? I felt really blessed that that God had purpose for my life, and really, really humble to have been, for God to have opened so many doors for me and give a life to me that I never even knew existed, that I never even really wanted. 'Cause when I started to speak, I was just speaking locally at high schools. And 6 months into that, I received an award for the work that I was doing. And Susan Taylor, the editor of Essence Magazine, was the keynote speaker. And, she heard me speak for 3 minutes, and she called me 2 weeks later and asked me, would I be on the cover of Essence? And I said to her, Ms. Taylor, there's not a woman in America black woman in America who would want to be on the cover of Essence.
I know, right?
You know nothing about me. You heard me speak for 3 minutes. Why would you do it? She said, I believe you have a story to tell. And so really what you had for me was humility, that God could take all of my ugly stuff and do something incredible with it. The Bible says, man plans, then God plans. Let's see who's the best planner. The Quran says, God plans, man plans, and God laughs. And so, who knew that God would take me on this path? And so really what I was doing, I was living, so the speaking engagements and the St. John's and looking fabulous was a part of the work that I was, it was a blessing for the work that I was doing. But make no mistakes, there was so much humility. And, people still tell me that I have no idea the impact that I've had on their lives. And I'm grateful for it. And I'm grateful that I'm still here.
Absolutely.
I'm grateful that I had a doctor who fought for me when I couldn't fight for myself. And I follow, and this is important, and I want people to know who are living with HIV, you can continue to groove through life with HIV. And that is incredibly important because when I was diagnosed, there were no medicines to treat HIV. Now we have over 43 HIV medications.
Wow.
And if you get tested and know your HIV status and get into treatment and to care, you may never transition to AIDS.
Oh, really? No, I didn't even know that. I didn't know that.
Yes.
Now,
just say this one
thing.
Okay,
go on. Yeah.
Because it's connected to this.
Okay.
If a person gets in treatment and care and their viral load is undetectable, they cannot
transmit HIV to their partner.
You cannot transmit it?
Yes, ma'am, that is correct. I cannot. So right now, my viral load is undetectable. And viral load is how much of the virus that copies in your body, because what HIV does is it copies in your body. And the more it copies in your body, the sicker you are, the sicker you become, because it then destroys that huge amount of the virus inside of your body. It's destroying your T cells, which protects your immune system. Uh-huh. And so today, and we have a campaign going on, CDC, it's called U equals U. Undetectable equals untransmittable. And we're trying to get to that place so that we can move some of the shame and stigma with HIV.
Okay, let's stop here. We're going to hear another word from one of our sponsors. Then we're going to pick it back up with you, Ray Lewis Thornton.
Okay.
I thought we were going to hear from one of our sponsors. Maybe not.
Okay.
Okay. Well, let's continue. So I have a question for you then,
okay,
Ray. Oftentimes when people are in a funky kind of place, for example, age has not been kind to you. You've had moments of utmost sickness, physical, visible kinds of indicators. I know you take tons of medicine, you know, on a regular basis. There are times when people are in that place that they grab on to what I call groove imitators, things that make them feel good but are temporary. Did you ever grab on to any groove imitators during your journey?
Yeah, shopping.
Okay.
Shopping. You know, what's interesting about me is I've been drug, alcohol, cigarette-free my entire life. And so, I've always wanted to kind of keep a clear mind and take care of myself. And so, to escape, I shop.
Mm-hmm.
And then that was connected to a sickness because, I mean, my mother cussed me to everything she can think of, but she brought clothes home every pay period. And I began to ask, and the more I asked, the more she gave. And that became my love and affection came through the things that my mother bought for me.
Okay.
You know, and so that was, you know, that's how I feel my voice. That's how I, you know.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that, you know, men, you know, the fact that men would want to date me. And after my divorce, you know, I have never had a problem getting a man to have sex with me. In fact, that's the easiest thing. And at some point in my life, I used to think that, you know, I was a bad bee because men still wanted to be with me. I mean, bad men wanted to be with me, that kind of crazy thinking. And it took a lot of work on myself to get me to a place where my worth was no longer between my legs.
All right. Let's stop here. Our sponsor is ready. We're going to hear a word from our sponsor.
Interested in having your own copy of Dr. Maxine's book, I Want My Groove Back God's Way? Visit the Groove Back Doctor's website and order your copy today. While there, check out the other books that Dr. Bryant has authored, plus join her mailing list. The address is www.mygrooveback.com. We look forward to hearing from you soon.
Thank you. And you heard just now about my second book. It's actually called Truth Be Told. It's a collection of poetry, and the half of the hour is a part of the poetry collection in that book. So if you want it, please do as you were just told, and you can get a copy yourself, even signed. It'll be signed and delivered to you. Okay, so Ray, we were talking about groove imitators and recognizing that our own self-worth as women is not in between our legs, and I guess that goes true for men too, is not in shopping and buying the top-line designer bag. So as you've journeyed, and we want to talk a little bit more about your journey, but as you've journeyed, where have you found your groove giver to be? Who? How do you maintain and sustain through the ups and the downs of living with AIDS?
You know, at the end of the day, I say all the time that I always want to go and see what the end is going to be. Excuse me. Just watch God blow my mind.
All right.
And do something that, and he will do it. And so I keep going because of that, because what I know for sure is God always has a next. And so I want to know what the next is. And so I just keep on, because I know that there's always a next. And that is the thing that motivates me, that keeps me going, keeps me pushing, that God always has a next.
That is awesome. As a matter of fact, one of the things I have on my computer is living for the next, right? Because you don't know what the next is, but I have those words on my computer. Maxine,
you've got to
live for the next.
And some of it is being able to just let go and let God, you know. You just got to, you know, we don't listen to ourselves enough. You know, we're so busy. It's so noisy. And especially now during the Trump administration, there's more noise and noise and noise. And
all right.
And so sometimes you have to learn how to shut the noise out. And that means even to shut the noise out in your head and tell your head to stop talking to you. And just be open to letting God speak to your spirit and soul, you know, and be in that group. Because what happens is when you're a busybody, when you're just filling your days with stuff, it gets you a lot of stuff, but it may not necessarily bring you a lot of peace.
All right.
And so I just say that people need to let go, let God, you know, take some time away from the noise. You know, I use social media very heavily for my work. Like I don't do social on Sundays, although I have started my Sunday chats. I do evening chat on Sundays on Facebook, but other than that, I don't tweet. I don't look at anything. Sometimes you have to stop the noise.
That's your downtime. Yeah.
That's my downtime. Good. And I just believe that just got to keep on going, because God got something in store. You just got to believe it and not want to control it.
All right. And that's hard. That can be very, very difficult.
Ooh,
let me ask you this. So you have, since I've known you, been very transparent, whether you're in person, on the radio, or news television shows. I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, I know one of the news magazines, the televised news magazines, I don't know whether it was a CNN show or whatever, had you on. Which one was it? Who had you on television? They followed.
Everybody. So I did a series of news reports on my life that were first person news reports for CBS Chicago that I won an Emmy for. But the Nightline followed me for 4 or 5 months, and they did a piece that was entitled Ray's Story. And then after that, they did two other pieces. They did one where they compared my life and Mary Fisher's life, who is the woman, Republican woman, who spoke at the Republican conventions during the Bush administration. Wealthy woman who ended up with HIV. She interned in the Nixon administration. And then I sat in the studio, which was a privilege, with Ted Koppel and Dr. Fauci, which is one of the most renowned doctors. Then I did Oprah, the Mantel Williams show, and Oprah, and, you know, BET. I've been on BET 1,000 times. And,
okay.
And so God has really opened doors. And what I've seen with all of this, that every single door that gets open where I'm able to talk, including this show, is a part of my ministry. And I take it very serious. And I do turn people down, because if I don't feel like it is, if I don't feel like it's going to be a good environment to help people, then I say no.
How do you determine that?
Well, for TV, definitely there's always a storyline. And what people don't ask is, what's your storyline? And it does not matter how much good footage you take and have say some incredible things. The story is going to be edited based upon the storyline. So you hear what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do.
So that's all the tabloid stuff, because you're just like, I was on there and I said all, and they didn't use any of that. No, they used the sound bites to fit the storyline.
I know.
And so, like, for example, the first time I was approached to do the Oprah show, the title of the show was Scared Straight Out of Not Having Sex, Out of Having Sex. So they wanted me to take two teen girls and let them ride around, be it with me, shadow me all day, and I was supposed to scare them out of not having sex. I said, first of all, these girls come to my house and they see my BMW, they're going to be like, shit, this girl living large.
Hello.
Don't be thinking about what's between their legs. And I felt the storyline just bothered me.
Yeah.
And the producer, she talked me down. I mean, that woman talked to me, and she got me to a good place, and I agreed to do it. And that evening, about 9 o'clock, one of the associate producers called me and asked me, could I get some pictures out? The cameras were coming in the morning. Could I get some pictures out of when I was a teenager having unprotected sex? And I went to sleep on it, and I woke up, and I called Oprah show back, and I talked to the producer, and then I needed to step away from it, because I, you know, people say, you do Oprah, you know you there when you do Oprah, and ego was wrapped around it, and how do you not turn Oprah down? And so I had another friend, a business partner, call, and he called me back, and he said, you know, one of the things that you've always said to me is that your ministry is more important than anything. And he said to me, I heard the same thing you said to me. I heard that from her. And my question to you, which is, he said, if this was the Jenny Jones show, what would you have said? I said, we would have ended the discussion yesterday afternoon.
Okay.
He said, and so why are you doing it with Oprah? I said, because she's Oprah. And he said to me, is your ministry more important, or is doing Oprah more important?
Okay.
And he called them back and canceled an hour before they were supposed to meet me at the hospital to shoot footage.
Wow. Okay. So that took some bravery.
Oh, girl, look, because it ain't about me. It's about where I, you know, really believe that God can use me. And then, you know, they called back. They came back again, and, you know, still. And they finally came with a storyline that made sense. And it was one on long-term survivors. And I did it.
Okay. Because it was about, you know, educating people and not necessarily staring.
It was about, yeah. And,
yeah.
There's a difference.
So let's take a break here. It's time to have another word from one of our sponsors.
You know Dr. Maxine Bryant as the Groove Back Doctor, but Dr. Maxine Bryant also provides informed, inspiring, and thought-provoking presentations on criminal justice issues,
current trends and practices. Through Bryant Educational Seminars and Training, she delivers the best in training design and dynamics. Learn more about Dr. Bryant and her work at her website, www.bestchoiceconsulting. Consider securing Dr. Bryant for your next conference or training. Visit www.bestchoiceconsulting.com.
Thank you. So, Ray, we have about another 15 minutes left for the show.
All right.
And so I want to give you some time. You're working on a memoir. Tell us about that. And what's the purpose? What motivated you? What are you hoping to accomplish?
Well, 10 years ago, I had a book deal. And, I mean, a bona fide with an advance and all of that good stuff. And I was an A-list publisher. You know, sometimes be careful what you ask God for. You just may get it.
Mm-hmm.
And the editor and I couldn't come to terms. She wanted the black girl who had had the horrible life, but she didn't want the black girl who had 27 years of education.
Okay.
And I remember one time she said to me, for lack of a better explanation, I wanted to read like a James Fry. She said, embellish, 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 just don't lie. And I said to myself, shit, I done told y'all who raped me, who molested me, who I screwed, who screwed me. What the most do your people want? And they couldn't come to terms. And so they walked away, and she said I was a horrible writer. And, you know, sometimes you internalize those things.
Yeah.
And so I, you know, I've held on to the manuscript. I started blogging about 7 years ago, and my blog has won awards. So if I couldn't write, you know, then, you know, and then I had to think about the fact that I, you know, went to college, magna cum laude, and went to seminary on a merit scholarship, working on my PhD on an academic fellowship. So all of this, not being able to write stuff, you know, and you can't let people name who you are.
Oh, say that. They cannot define you, right? Unless we allow them to. And that gives them way too much power.
And so about 3 years ago, I started working on the memoir, and I got stuck.
Okay.
It basically stuck in the pain. And
so explain that for a moment. Stuck in the pain. What does that mean?
Well, you know what? When you when you're writing about being molested at six and trying to put it on paper in a way, because you don't even have a name for sex at six.
Wow.
You know, and you know, trying to make it make sense in a way. You actually are reliving, you know, when you read a good book, you're in it, and you're with that book, you're with that author. And in writing the book, I'm in my story, I'm living my story. As I'm writing, I am reliving my story.
Mm.
And so I had been holding on to the memoir, and the long and short of it is, I read Cookie Johnson's memoir back about 4 months ago, and it really inspired me to pick up my book again. And I was doing well, and then I found that I got a little off sometimes. I get distracted here in Chicago. So I did a Kickstarter that was funded. And mid-January, I'm going to leave Chicago for about 3 months and travel and write. And that's all I'm doing is writing. We're expecting to publish in September. The name of my memoir is Unprotected. You can go to my Instagram account, Ray, R-A-E-L-T, and, you know, get up-to-date posts. Follow me as I travel really across the world, because I am going to leave Chicago. I'm going to leave the United States in these 3 months to write. And
what do you want to come out of this? So why are you?
You know what? I wanted to help somebody. I want women to say, Oh, I understand this. That your experience resonates with me. I want them to see that there is resilience on the other side of pain. I want to name sexual abuse and all its different forms and how it happens and how you get you. I mean, I was 29 before I even accepted I was abused. I'll never forget. I was sitting in the therapist's office. And I said, oh, I've been having sex my whole life. I was having sex when I was 6. I was having sex when I was 9. And the therapist looked at my crazy ass and said, how does a 6-year-old have sex with a grown man?
Wow.
Damn. But for African Americans, we get confused.
We do.
Yeah,
don't.
She's so fast. She needs to sit her fast self down somewhere. What you need to be doing is asking, why is she so comfortable in the face of grown men?
Mm.
Who has taught her this? And so it is the book, Everything, Who Did What to Me, What I Did. And I'm hoping, and I'll be as transparent as I've been with my life in the years that I've been public about my status. And I'm hoping that it helps someone. I see it as just another extension of my ministry.
Okay. So, Ray, did you ever contact the person, or do you know who infected you?
I do know, and it will be in the book.
Okay.
I've never talked about it publicly. So it will be in the book.
It's going to be.
It'll have its own chapter.
Okay, he gets a whole chapter.
And you're going to want to read it. And you are going to want to read it.
All right. So, Ray, I remember the poem that I read about you at the top of the hour was actually one that appeared in a book that, if I'm not mistaken, you and your husband at the time had put it together. And we're going to talk more about that, but we have a call on the line. So, caller,
okay.
You have a question or a comment for Ray Lewis Thornton.
Hi, yes. Thank you, Dr. Maxine Bryant. Your show is very profound. I appreciate your guest, Ray. Hello, Ms. Ray. I appreciate your transparency.
Hi, how are you?
I am blessed. My name is Beverly, and I just wanted to let you know that you have said so many different profound and yet transparent and very touching points, simple and yet touching. For instance, when you said a 6-year-old doesn't even know a term for sex, doesn't know what sex is. People don't realize the mental state of a child has not figured out the act or the thing or the this that they're experiencing. And I thought that was very profound because I hadn't thought of it in that light. And then also, just knowing that you have been through as much as you have been through. One other thing that is very unique is to be raised by a step-grandmother. We don't hear about that in the Black community. I have never heard about that in the Black community. So it's really, you know, we all, just like Susan Taylor told you, you have a story. And I'm also a publisher. I'm the creator of Gumbo for the Soul Publications. And that is my mantra. Everyone has a story to tell. Who will you trust to tell yours? And see, you can't trust anyone else to tell your story and give your truth the way you know it. Okay? They're going to skim over some points. They're not going to tell it from your point of view. They don't know your point of view. They don't know the core of your pain, the level of your hurt, the depth of it. And for you to even evoke that, you relive it when you get back to it. When you get back around
from prancing and knowing you the ish to, wait a minute, hey, wait a minute, I've been abused, you know, but see, God allowed you the grace to still acquiesce into in your beauty and your womanhood and carry yourself like a queen. He didn't keep you from knowing that there's a queen inside you when you were going through all of that, and then by the time you get back around to realizing, wait a minute, I've been through some stuff, hold up. Okay, and then your mind catches up with who you are inside, and now you're able to bring it all together. Your book is going to be so powerful, and I'm going to get off of this air now, but the last thing I'm going to leave you with is I would love to have you as a guest on The Woman at the Well. I have a platform that will be starting, and it is addressing Me Too moments. It has never been divulged before, but I cannot help from divulging it today that Me Too Moments on The Woman at the Well starts January 2018, and this is our 9th season of The Woman at the Well. It is nothing less than transparent, profound, and it's deep, and I would just love to have you on there, and you also, Dr. Maxine.
Send me an email.
So thank you again.
Thank you, caller. Thank you.
Thank you. God bless.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Ray, before we get off, you know what she brought up is that you are speaking what many women have lived, and we don't talk about it. And what you're doing is giving us permission to be to rise up above the pain. There's an author, and I want to say, I can't remember his name, but he talks about, particularly in the black community, how important it is for us to get in our pain, to talk about it, so that we can move away from it into our future. And childhood molestation is it's commonplace in the black community. We don't want to admit it. But it's commonplace. I was a guest on another radio show, and I talked about my own childhood molestation, right? It happens, mm-hmm. but it happens in a shroud of secrecy. And so what I want to say to you is thank you. Thank you for being so transparent and in your upcoming book and all of that, because you're letting women know that we need to speak up and speak out and support one another. Because that's how we're going to survive the pain. And if you notice, God is unraveling a lot of things that have been going on in high places, if you're paying attention nationally, around mm-hmm. sexual misbehavior, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think women are being emboldened, and you are a trailblazer for black women. So thank you.
You're welcome.
You were, let's see, I'm trying to see how much, we got about 3 more minutes. So you're blogging, you're still reaching people, you're still telling your story, you're still speaking. Now, I do know that there have been times where you have been so very sick that, you know, it seemed like the AIDS was, you know, taking the best of you. How did you make it through those moments, Ray?
But God.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Will to live in God. And what I want to really end with, I mean, that's the basis of my life, but I want your listeners to go get tested, know your mm-hmm. HIV status.
Okay.
If you're infected, get in treatment and stay in treatment, because you can live a long, healthy life.
Yeah.
Because we have to reduce the number of cases of HIV. We just have to.
Absolutely. And you know what?
I mean, you admire me, but I don't want you to live my life.
Okay. I know that's right. Right, Ray?
Right.
You say you don't have to. I remember many years ago when my son became sexually active, we went and got tested together. You know, we made it a family affair. Now, that's been years ago. And if he's listening now, he'd like have a fit, right? But you know, when you know the importance of knowing your status, then you can, like Ray said, you can halt the progress, the process, It doesn't have to take you out. What I was saying about the book, the poem, was actually in a book. If you remember, you and Kenny were publishing, and you did publish it. I forget what it was called. Do you remember that, Ray? Your first, I think, may have been.
And Kenny was out of my life by then. Amazing Grace, Letters Along My Journey.
Right. And so that poem that I read appeared in that book. Say that again?
Yeah. I had quit Kenny by then.
Okay, my bad. But I remember that was supposed to be a book that was put together that was going to be in memory of you. You were preparing to die. You remember
right.
that?
Right, and we did a book of letters and poems and things that people have dedicated to me over the years. And, you know, I wanted to show the impact that my life would have. And little did know, I'm still here.
You still here, girl. Still here.
Still
but listen,
here.
Ladies and gentlemen, our time is up. You have been listening to the Dr. Maxine Bryan Show. My special, special guest has been Ray Lewis Thornton, the Lady Diva herself. She is raw. She is real. She is still relevant. Thank you very much for joining us, and we look forward to seeing you in 2 weeks in the Dr. Maxine Bryan Show. We want to invite you to join us on Christmas Day. Oh, my goodness. That's the next time we will be on. And we're going to have to let you know via Facebook exactly when we're going to be on during that time. We'll be talking to the producers and finding out if you can join us definitely on Christmas or if it'll be the day before or the day after. You have a good rest of today. Continue to be blessed. Continue to live in groove.
And we want to just say for the record, your next show will be December 26th as scheduled for the holidays on the first day of Kwanzaa after Christmas. And we are excited.
Now.
Have a blessed day.
Thank you.
Merry Christmas.
You, listening audience. Be blessed. Thank you, Ray Lewis Thornton. Good night, everybody.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me. Bye-bye.
Have I told you lately that I love you? Have I told you lately that I care? Yeah. Have I told you lately that you are wonderful? You're magnificent and so much more. Have I told you lately that I love you? Have I told you lately you're my king? You are number one. You're magnificent.